Mr. Harper.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. As I explained in my Rule 28J letter, given this Court's recent ruling in Viracocha, I will not focus this morning on the request for asylum or the changed circumstances determination.
Her name is Jimenez.
Jimenez. The Court's decision in Jimenez, I will not focus on the changed circumstances determination or the application for asylum as it relates to the one-year deadline. Instead, I will focus on the error committed by the immigration judge and the Board of Immigration Appeals in deciding that Mr. Alvarez did not qualify for withholding of removal.
Has that issue been preserved for decision?
Which issue, Your Honor?
Withholding of removal.
Yes, Your Honor, it has. In our brief, we argued the facts as it relates to fear of future persecution as well as past persecution for both the asylum standard and the withholding of removal standard. Not only is it included in our prayer for relief, but at several points in the brief, we point out that the events that we are describing are sufficient to meet the standards for both asylum and withholding of removal. So, yes, Your Honor, we did...
I must say, I certainly didn't see any argument focused on withholding of removal. If what you're saying is any alien who argues for asylum is arguing for withholding of removal, that's simply false. They're different legal standards.
That's
why you need some part of the brief addressed to the legal standard for withholding of removal, rather than just saying, well, we've argued for asylum, so we get withholding of removal.
Well, that assumes
identity of legal standards, which isn't correct.
No, I would agree that they are not identical legal standards. But what our brief did was state that the legal standard for both asylum and withholding of removal were satisfied.
You can state that until you're blue in the face, but the question I've asked is, have you argued it?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe that we have, and we argued it in a way that explains how the immigration judge and the Board of Immigration Appeals, in affirming the immigration judge's opinion, made a mistake because the evidence presented at the merits hearing established not only the reasonable probability, but also the clear probability, such that both standards were satisfied, and that the evidence presented at the merits hearing compels a contrary result. This is not a case, as the government would have you believe, of mere inconvenience or simple harassment. This is a case about a family threatened with death should it be required to return to Venezuela. Mr. Alvarez's family received 14 death threats during the 10 months preceding his merits hearing.
Well, I understand that the Chavez's threatened everybody in America with death at some place along the line. What makes your client unique in that regard?
What makes my client unique is that if my client is forced to return to Venezuela, the Bolivarian...
Stay here. We can avoid the problem.
But, yes, Your Honor. The Bolivarian circles are very willing and capable of killing my client should he return to Venezuela. Hugo Chavez's threats towards our president are less likely to be carried out. And it's important to note that that's exactly what the immigration judge found in this case. The immigration judge did not find that these threats were not true, these threats were not real insofar as the facts of the threats themselves happened. What the immigration judge found, and the BIA held in affirming the immigration judge's decision, is that the threats might not be carried out should my clients return to Venezuela. But that's just supposition. The immigration judge did not cite any evidence for that, and indeed, the government presented no evidence at the merits hearing that the Bolivarian circles were not willing and able to carry out these threats.
Have other well-off or wealthy people from Venezuela successfully sought asylum or withholding of removal in America?
I am not aware of other Venezuelans who have identified this particular social group, but I'm also not aware of other Venezuelans who had suffered this level of past persecution and had faced death threats.
There were a significant number of wealthy people in Venezuela who were very unhappy when Hugo Chavez came to power. So I don't know. Is this a unique case, or are there other cases?
It is, Your Honor, because this is not just about mere unhappiness. I mean, this is about death threats. This is about a situation where the government wants us to say, let's send this family back to Venezuela and see if they will be killed. Again, in surmising that these threats might not take place, the immigration judge said, Mr. Alvarez did not present any evidence to establish that other Venezuelans had received death threats and had returned to Venezuela and had been killed. And Mr. Alvarez is not aware of other Venezuelans who have received these death threats since they have been in America. But the evidence presented at the merits hearing showed that the Bolivarian circles are both capable and willing to carry out their death threats. There was eyewitness testimony. Mr. Alvarez testified that he was present at a march where the Bolivarian circles killed an anti-Chavez marcher. But it's not limited to being a participant in a march. In fact, the eyewitness testimony also established that you can just be walking down the street. Mrs. Montecito's sister was attacked by the Bolivarian circles and beaten with rocks and stones while she was walking down the street. Again, the immigration judge did not find that these facts were not true. There was no finding that this was not credible. It was just a finding that the Bolivarian circles were not capable of carrying out their threats. Mrs. Montecito's nephew was attacked while he was leaving school. Mrs. Montecito's cousin was attacked while he was at work at Globovision. In addition to this firsthand testimony, the immigration judge and the BIA ignored other credible evidence, including evidence from the United States State Department. The country report for 2003 states, and I'll read from the report, members of the political opposition received death threats and were victims of intimidation by government supporters. At least a dozen killings during the year may have been politically motivated. Evidence from other third-party observers also compel a finding the Bolivarian circles are willing and able to carry out their threats. For example, Amnesty International reported that in a one-week period in 2004, political violence erupted that resulted in 14 killings and over 200 people injured. Amnesty International also found credible reports of excessive use of force by the security forces, with 500 detentions and reports of ill treatment and torture. The standard that the immigration judge was to apply to this question on withholding of removal is whether or not this future fear of future persecution, whether it was more likely than not that Howard, Mr. Alvarez, would have been persecuted should he return to Venezuela. Based on the evidence presented at the merits hearing, any reasonable adjudicator would have found that Mr. Alvarez is more likely than not to be persecuted or even killed should he and his family be required to return to Venezuela. As this court, or not this court, but as the court in Andreasian v. INS stated, there is no doubt that persistent threats and assaults on one's life, family, and businesses rise to the level of persecution. And that case involved both asylum and withholding of removal. But this case is not just about death threats. 2 weeks before Mr. Alvarez left Venezuela, he was beaten by the Bolivarian circles. Again, the immigration judge did not find that Mr. Alvarez and Mrs. Montecito's account of this event was not credible. What the immigration judge found was that the beating of Mr. Alvarez by the Bolivarian circles was not severe enough to constitute past persecution. However, the evidence presented at the merits hearing compels a contrary result. Mr. Alvarez testified at the merits hearing that he was beaten so severely that he was unable to work for 2 weeks. A forensic examiner from the Homicide Prevention Division who examined Mr. Alvarez confirmed the severity of his beating, and that report was included in the record. This case is distinguishable from the case the immigration judge and the attorney general rely on, Dandan v. Ashcroft. In Dandan, this court found that the petitioner failed to establish specific circumstances relating to his beating that resulted in his face becoming swollen. This court noted that the petitioner in Dandan alone could have provided those details, but that he failed to do so. This court stated that when it looks for evidence that compels a contrary conclusion, it looks for specifics. Here, Mr. Alvarez provided specifics. He not only testified to the extent of his injury, but he also provided a copy of the medical examination from the forensic investigator. The beating in this case was so severe that he had bruising around his face, shoulders, chest, and thighs, as well as scratches covering both his arms. In this regard, the beating in this case is much more like the beatings in the two cases discussed in Dandan, the cases of this court, the holdings of this court in Asani and Viduva. In Asani, this court found past persecution based on a beating that resulted in two teeth being knocked out. This court rejected the immigration judge's determination that the beating was not severe enough to constitute past persecution.
Before you sit down, just tell me, what do you make of the fact that they're here a long time before they ask for asylum? I mean, I would think ordinarily if you're fleeing the situation as you describe it, that the minute you land here, or certainly within a year, you would file an asylum application.
Well, and Mr. Alvarez did address this at the merits hearing, and he gave several reasons for that. First of all, and this is no excuse, he was unaware of his right to seek asylum when he first came to the country. But more importantly, he hadn't received the death threats, although he does apply for asylum before the death threats. And he explains that by saying he was hopeful. He had hope that someday conditions in Venezuela would improve such that he would be able to return to his home country. In fact, he still to this day holds that hope.
Okay. Your time is up.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harper.
Thank you.
Ms. Johnson.
May it please the Court, my name is Joanne Johnson, and I represent the United States in the case before the Court today. First, as petitioner agrees, the Court lacks jurisdiction to review petitioner's untimely filed asylum application. Second, this Court, petitioner waived this Court's review of his withholding of removal claim and his CAT claim. First of all, with respect to his withholding of removal claim, in petitioner's opening brief, he does not provide any analysis with respect to withholding of removal. In fact, he asserts the wrong standard for withholding of removal and focuses on reasonable probability, although there is a line in his brief where he acknowledges that the standard is more likely than not for withholding of removal. His analysis focuses on the reasonable probability standard for asylum. In fact, his brief bolds parts of his brief, he bolds that standard. Yes, Your Honor?
Does the agency take into consideration the two children?
The immigration judge was aware of the children that petitioner...
Well, I asked, no, do they take it into consideration, or is it just something they ignore?
In this case, Your Honor, as indicated in our brief, petitioner did appear to raise a hardship claim, which, as we noted in our brief, they failed to exhaust before the board, so the Court would lack jurisdiction over that.
Is there generally an attitude from the agency that the children that are born United States citizens are not relevant to the issue of the asylum? In general.
Whether the agency would consider the fact that there are children, I think that is considered in the context of the relief, which is cancellation of removal, when they demonstrate exceptional, extremely unusual hardship to a qualifying
citizen. So the children aren't taken into consideration.
Well, the children are taken into consideration in the cancellation of removal context, and the children are taken into consideration when the immigration judge evaluates the whole validity of the petitioner's asylum and withholding of removal claim, because he, you know, would want to consider all the facts and evidence before sending somebody back if it would be that they'd more likely than not be tortured, and that would naturally consider the entire record, which would include the family members. With respect to CAT, Your Honor, the Convention Against Torture, there's no argument whatsoever in petitioner's brief with respect to that issue, so that is waived before the Court as well. If the Court determines that that withholding of removal was not waived, the respondent maintains that the record evidence does not compel a conclusion contrary to what the agency decided in this case. Petitioner failed to establish past persecution, and petitioner failed to establish that it was more likely than not that he would suffer future persecution if returned to Venezuela. I will just identify a few instances that support the immigration judge and board's conclusion in this regard. First of all, petitioner came to the United States in 2001 after he participated in the political marches that formed a foundation for his past persecution claim, yet he returned to Venezuela after that. Second of all, petitioner came back to the United States as a visitor for vacation, admittedly, and yet he overstayed his visa and wasn't until over one year after his overstay of his visa that he then applied for asylum. And this was after the alleged taxicab incident, which again forms another basis for his past persecution claim. These travel back and forth and delayed filing of his asylum application support the immigration judges and board's conclusion that he failed to meet his burden of proof. With respect to the taxicab incident, as the immigration judge had explained, from the evidence presented, it appeared that petitioner had, by his own testimony and admissions, had been in a cab that had been driven into where there appeared to be a riot with the Bolivian Circle, and petitioner failed to establish that the attack of him was on account of any of the statutory protected grounds. And the persecution and the harm that he endured didn't rise to the level of persecution by his own admission. He stated it was a cut lip and a bruised eye. While we don't diminish that that's still an injury, the immigration judge acknowledged that it didn't rise to the level of persecution. And even if it did, he failed to show that it was on account of. Moreover, again, as I just mentioned, he came back. He came to the United States on a visitor visa after this. And in addition, the police report that's in the record at page A686 says that the Bolivian Circle was attacking everyone in cars, not respecting anyone or anything, further supporting the agency's conclusion that petitioner failed to show on account of. Other points are that petitioner admitted that he was not part of the any political party, and that his family, who does his grandparents, who do seemingly belong in the Democratic Party, continue to reside in Venezuela unharmed and socialize and are active in their respective organizations, which further undercuts his claim of persecution. With respect to the death threats, these threats occurred in 2005, right at the eve of petitioner's merits hearing, and yet petitioner had been in the United States over 3 years by that point, and these death threats only started in 2005, and he conceded that he couldn't explain why that was the case. In addition, they didn't identify who the people were who were allegedly making these threats. Petitioner conceded that he hasn't had any contact with the Venezuelan government since 2003. And his family, who's been receiving these threats, conceded they have not been harmed, have not been jailed. In addition, with respect to being in the United States and voting in the United States, he has to show more than a mere possibility of persecution. Simply residing in the United States as a Venezuelan national doesn't indicate that if he went back to Venezuela, he would be subject to persecution. Petitioner carries the burden of proof in this case, and petitioner failed to meet his burden of proof. And for these reasons, the United States respectfully requests that the court deny the petition for review. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.